I'm Melissa Harris Perry. And yes, the team of The Takeaway is in here. We're listening to Beyonce and sipping on the lemonade of unapologetic executive authority. It was President Biden's Monday press conference about America's messy departure from Afghanistan that got us thinking about what it sounds like when leaders say,
sorry, I ain't sorry, sorry, I ain't sorry.
On Monday, President Biden sounded like this.
I am President of the United States of America, and the buck stops with me.
This is what George W. Bush sounded like throughout his presidency.
And what the American people need to know is what our allies know. I am determined to stay the course.
And many would agree that President Trump took unapologetic to new lengths during his single term in office.
I'm the President of the United States. Don't ever talk to the President that way.
This steadfast, make-no-apology stance is so common, I sometimes wonder if all the D.C. political advisors and speechwriters have watched Aaron Sorkin's The American President one too many times.
My name is Andrew Shepherd, and I am the president.
Sorry now.
And it's worth noting what happened to the presidential candidate who did make multiple high-profile apologies, Hillary Rodham Clinton. She had to apologize for using her personal email.
That was a mistake. I'm sorry about that. I take responsibility. And I'm trying to be as transparent as I possibly can.
She had to apologize for backing her husband's crime bill when she was first lady.
I'm sorry for the consequences that were unintended and that have had a very unfortunate impact on people's lives.
She even had to apologize for losing the election.
And I'm sorry that we did not win this election.
It seems like our politics prefers stay the course, the buck stops here, I am the president shows of strength. But is that political preference harming the quality of our democracy? Isn't there something strong about being willing to bend? Joining me now is Joel Payne, former aide to Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign and host of the podcast Here Comes the Pain. Joel, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
And also joining the conversation is Aisha Roscoe, White House correspondent for NPR, who is currently covering her third presidential administration. Aisha, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
So Aisha, to me, it was striking to hear President Biden say the buck stops here on Monday. And although he was certainly taking accountability, he also sounded pretty unapologetic to me. Is that what you heard, or did you hear that speech differently?
I heard him trying to, and I felt like he was trying to draw a distinction from the prior administration and from former President Trump, who never apologized. And in this case, I felt like Biden was saying, I take responsibility, I am president. But he also was saying he didn't have any regrets. He was also very defensive. I do agree that he wasn't apologizing. He was saying, I take responsibility for what happened, although he wasn't super specific about what he was taking responsibility for. But he was saying that he takes responsibility, but he was not apologizing. And he was not saying that he regretted anything. And he has said he does not regret his actions or even that he feels like he could have done something differently.
Joel, what did you hear?
I think the president was trying to take accountability, which is a quality and a value that we appreciate in our leaders, generally speaking. But I think it even goes a level deeper for me. Our relationships with our presidents are singular in the federal system. We have this personal rapport and relationship with our presidents that are unique to anybody else in government. It's not like a relationship with a senator or a governor or a mayor. The president has a really unique individual relationship with voters. And so you're always digging into that reservoir of goodwill and trust. And President Biden, one of his key qualities that helped him be the president was that the American people trust him. And they've trusted him through a lot of public moments as vice president, as senator, and now as president. And the president was digging into that reservoir to tap into that trust to say, you know me, you know who I am. I made this decision and I take responsibility, but I'm not going to apologize. So the biggest piece that I see here is just that reservoir of goodwill, but also, are you genuine? Because I think that is what voters and that is what citizens are looking for most is, are you genuine? And can I tell that you're being genuine in these key moments?
So that's such an interesting description and way of thinking about it, Joel, because, you know, I do think that we can think that a leader is genuine, is authentic, without necessarily thinking that they are fully trustworthy. So this kept happening during Bill Clinton's presidency in the public opinion polls. You'd see, I don't necessarily trust him on his personal ethics, but I do trust him to protect the economy. And that's what I care about as a voter. Aisha, I'm wondering, as you kind of listen to this idea that Joel is offering us, this really interesting one, that we have a particular singular relationship with our president, I'm wondering if tapping into that reservoir of trust means being more willing to be transparent about one's vulnerabilities and faults and mistakes, or less transparent about them.
In American history, it has meant being less transparent about vulnerabilities and faults and mistakes. And I will say that it is a very, and I agree with Joel, it's a very different relationship, right? Like that the president has. It's almost like a parental figure. It's this leader. He's supposed to comfort the nation. But there's also this degree to which leadership in this country, I think, can be viewed as, to be strong is to not say that you're sorry. And I was taken by, you know, when you showed all those clips of Hillary Clinton, you have to look at that from the dynamic of a woman being told or being conditioned to apologize, to say, I'm sorry, to say, I didn't mean to do that. And men not necessarily being conditioned that way in this society, being taught that strength is saying, I did this, I take responsibility, but not saying, I'm sorry if anyone was hurt or offended, or that is not typically how strength is viewed in this country. It is in a very, this idea of a male dominance, I think, can't be separated from the fact that all of our presidents have been men, and this is the way they have projected.
Aisha, definitely taking us to a really critical place around gender analysis and this concept of strength and apology. So Joel, I got to come to you on this. As former aide to Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign, how did you all think about this question of gender, strength, and apology?
I mean, Melissa, I think I had the same reaction to Aisha's comments as you. It feels like she was taking us to church. and it does certainly bring back some thoughts about what that experience was like on the 2016 campaign with Hillary Clinton. It's interesting the qualities that people ascribe to these public figures, these political figures, whereas Donald Trump was seen as resolute and, you know, he had spine and he wouldn't back down. Hillary Clinton was seen as being inflexible, where he was seen as being cunning. She was seen as being untrustworthy. This certainly does get into gender dynamics. I think, by the way, it's part of the challenge that Vice President Harris has now and is going to continue to have as she continues to build out her public profile as somebody who is going to be on the political scene forever. But again, just want to just double down on this whole idea of that unique relationship that a president has with the American public. If you really think about it, that relationship with the president is the only one where they are in our homes and in our lives every single day for the 4 years of that term. There's no one else in the country that's like that. And so this reservoir of trust that we're talking about and whether or not they're taking accountability, it all becomes so much more important.
Aisha, in covering presidents, I'm wondering if you hear advisors, if you hear staff actually actively trying to think about maintaining that reservoir of trust with the American people?
It depends on the administration. Now, advisors typically want to be seen as trustworthy. They want people to believe what they have to say. They typically, in administrations, will try to at least give their spin of the truth. It's the truth, but it's a spin on it. I think there is a difficulty because even though people want their politicians to be trustworthy, there is this thing where politicians are sometimes punished for being too transparent, right? They do not benefit from saying, I messed up. When they say I messed up, then that becomes a campaign ad. And then people go, can you believe he messed up? What? You know, and it's not really taken as it doesn't necessarily benefit them. But I think there are two different issues here. It's the issue of what's good for democracy and what is good for an individual candidate or individual president who wants to get reelected. And sometimes it seems like the decision is, well, if we admit that we messed up, the cost will be more to us politically, even though it may be the morally right thing to do, we will face a political cost. And that is what they're kind of calculating.
Aisha, I feel like you've gone right to the core of it, that what is campaign strategy is different than sort of long-term democratic health strategy, right? That these might be two very different things. You might want a transparent, vulnerable, thoughtful, willing to learn president from a long-term democracy perspective, I think here of President Jimmy Carter. But from a political perspective, right, that kind of vulnerability and willingness to sort of learn publicly is often punished on the campaign trail. So, Joel, we've talked a little bit about gender. I want to talk about race a bit here, because I'm also thinking of President Obama so early in his presidency being sort of pressured to apologize for his statements that the Cambridge police acted stupidly. And I've always said I think it's just because he used an adverb and Americans don't use those anymore, so we made him apologize for it. But that ended up having an important effect on his sort of executive capacity over the next few years in terms of, you know, kind of always coming back to that beer summit moment.
That was a really unique moment in the Obama presidency where, look, there was certainly a part of the country, many of us African-Americans, who understood what he was saying, whatever part of speech he decided to lean into, adverbs, adjectives, what have you, participles, whatever you want to call it. We knew exactly what he was talking about when he was referring to the situation where that police officer accosted Skip Gates at his home. But the president, again, he's not just speaking as Barack Obama, the man, he's speaking as Barack Obama, the head of government. And it is uniquely layered when you are an African-American and you view the world through those lens. And I certainly think President Obama was treated to a different kind of understanding of what that was like as an African-American man. One thing, if I could just jump to really quickly, mm-hmm. Melissa, is what we're talking about here in this moment is really about President Biden trying to reframe this moment around Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And really, it's him trying to reclaim the narrative. And so that speech where he was talking about leaning into his accountability and leaning into the buck stops here, that was him trying to say, I am reclaiming control of the high ground in the narrative, which is more important than right or wrong at that point. It was demonstrating being in control.
And Aisha, I wonder also if, as Joel was pointing out, that reclamation of the narrative is particularly important in the president's role in foreign policy, right? That that sort of cannot show weakness might actually be good for democracy or good for governance when it is outward facing.
If there's any area you want the president to be in control, it would be foreign policy. It would be as commander in chief. So I think in many ways that is important, but it has to be backed up with action. So it can't just be the rhetoric. It has to be, you have to demonstrate, I think, in a case like this, that you actually are in control and that things, because if people keep seeing these images that look so distraught and so chaotic, that trust that Joel keeps talking about, that genuineness is going to be really tested.
Yeah, I mean, Joel, I'll come to that. Now I'm gonna like go a little hip hop and you know, love and hip hop here on it. But like, if you're standing there telling me, hey, you know, girl, just trust me, you know, we've been together a long time, but like, I can smell the perfume on you, like, that's gonna be a problem, because the evidence of what I can see is different than what you're saying. And isn't Biden maybe like in saying, trust me, I got this, but it doesn't look like he has this, isn't that possibly going to erode that reservoir of trust?
It's certainly possible, but that's where your record matters. I mean, President Biden can certainly point to a record of, as vice president, as senator, as a public figure, where his clear distinguishing characteristic is being someone of integrity, who deals straight with people, who talks straight. And those qualities come into real factor when you're talking about a crisis moment like this. We just had a president in Donald Trump who would not be able to draw on that same reservoir, right? Because that was not his public persona. No one certainly thought Donald Trump was being truthful or honest in his public moments. They thought he was always trying to obfuscate and dodge and dip. And so those moments play differently. If you put Donald Trump in the place of Joe Biden over the last week with this situation related to Afghanistan, I think it's a very different public conversation we're having.
Joel Payne, host of the podcast Here Comes the Payne, and Aisha Roscoe, White House correspondent for NPR. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you,
Melissa.